Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of That Movie
Show.
Yeah,
welcome into the season two.
Sure.
Right?
Season two-ish, episode 69.
Hey. It's really?
Yeah, it actually is.
Oh, we should have done Boogie Nights for this episode instead.
We should have, but we didn't think that far ahead.
No, we didn't think we'd get to 69.
Should have done Showgirls or something dirty.
Or Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. What number am I thinking of? 69, dude!
Of course you are. Of course you are. But we're not doing Bill and Ted's. We're not doing Showgirls. We're not doing Boogie Nights or we're not doing our first porno review or any of that stuff.
Pirates?
Pirates. Mike Went, Liam Stryker, we are doing Major League.
Yeah.
Baseball season is in full swing, and it's the 30th anniversary of Major League, and your first time seeing it.
Yeah, my first time seeing it.
My 20-something time seeing it, and I have even more thoughts than I thought I would have.
Yeah, I have thoughts on this movie. Not Planes, Trains, and Automobiles level
type of thoughts,
but I do have some thoughts.
So tell me you kind of liked it?
Yeah, it was okay.
Okay.
It wasn't the movie I A, thought it was, or B, wanted it to be. I found myself wishing that this movie was a little bit more slapsticky than it was. Like this,
the sequel is.
You know what? That's what some.
But the sequel is also Caddyshack 2-like sequel.
Yeah, right.
Where it's like, yeah, it's more slapsticky, and you'll realize that's not what you actually wanted out of this movie,
yeah.
And that this was. You appreciate the original much more for
yeah,
the sequel.
Yeah, it also feels far more like four different movies all kind of jammed into one movie.
Yep.
And that dysfunction stops it from being great. Mm-hmm. Because it's a baseball movie, so...
The storyline, the storyline is one of my many thoughts.
Yeah, it feels like... There's so many things going on, and it feels like we just remember things when it's convenient.
Sure.
As opposed to, like, having a ragtag Bad News Bears-esque adventure where mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, we're terrible at this, but let's not be terrible at this.
Right.
You know, the plot of the movie, the synopsis is mm-hmm. that the owner of the Cleveland Indians
right.
wants the team to be so bad that they can get out of their lease to move to Miami.
Correct.
So I asked the question,
yeah.
why, with all of these baseball players being brought in, none of them having roots to Cleveland,
sure.
why do we care? You know, like you know what I mean? Like, if I'm a Wild Thing,
sure.
and I want to be a major league pitcher,
right.
it doesn't matter whether I'm in Cleveland or Miami, I'm going to still be a major league pitcher.
I do have an answer for that, and I will answer it because my OCD is killing me. Let me get to the business.
Yes, let's do it.
Major League was released April 7th, 1989, right in time for spring training.
I'm older than this movie.
Shut up.
But like barely.
Had a budget of $11 million, brought back $49.8 million at the box office, so it was a success at the time. It was written and directed by Academy Award winner David S. Ward. He did The Sting.
Yeah.
Starring
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Tom Berenger, Charlie Sheen, Corbin Burnson, Margaret Whitten, the late great James Gammon, Rene Russo in her first ever movie, and of course WWE Hall of Famer Bob Uecker.
Yep. Bob Uecker.
Bob Uecker.
Really bringing this movie together.
He really did. I mean, he was playing Bob Uecker as Harry Doyle.
Yeah, right.
There was very little preparation he needed to do.
Oh, yeah. No, he was just Bob Uecker being Bob Uecker.
Exactly. Including with the Miller Lights.
Right. Yeah, of course.
So let's jump into it because you posed the question, why do the players care
yeah.
where they're playing? And the answer is in the movie. James Gammon's manager character, Lou Brown,
yeah.
tells them in the movie... it's when we get the Tom Berenger line, which we're jumping way ahead into the movie. We'll start over in a minute. But just to answer your question, we gotta win the whole fucking thing line.
Yeah, right.
It's because
they have pride.
Well, no, not even that. No, because like you said, they don't care where they play. They just want to play. And Lou Brown tells them that if you do well enough and the attendance isn't low enough, she will either send you back to the minors or just give you an outright release.
Right.
So this is a one-shot deal for all of them.
Right.
You're either going to, and that's why we get the win the whole fucking thing line, because
right.
they're either going to go out in a blaze of glory or they're just going to go out. Because if they move to Miami,
right.
she's still going to fire all of
them. She's going to gut
them. And then she's going to get a team that's actually going to play well for her and draw a crowd of Miami. So these guys are one and done.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, there was Major League Two, so obviously.
And three.
Back to the minors. Yeah.
They had a
three. With Scott Bakula.
There was three, so. But, yeah.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing about the sequel. I don't honestly mind Major League Two. It's a bad sequel.
Sure.
Bob Uecker really is the best part of it.
Okay.
And his really drunken commentary. Including when not Wesley Snipes, but Omar Epps' version of Willie Mays Hayes and Ricky Vaughn get into a fight
okay.
on the field, and Bob Uecker's shit-faced in a wife beater, and he's going, and he's basically calling it like a boxing match.
Oh, great.
I think Vaughn's dropping his left a little bit, Monty. It's going to hurt him in the later rounds. Bob Uecker was the standout. That and the character of Rube, who plays the rookie catcher.
Okay.
Those were the only two really shiny parts of
yeah.
the... Well, that's not true, actually. There was Willie Mays Hayes becomes an actor, and he has a action movie series that he stars alongside Jesse Ventura
okay.
called Black Thunder and White Lightning.
Okay.
And it's great.
I'd love to see that movie.
Just go Google the Black Thunder, White Lightning. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Was it Black Hammer? Yeah. Black Hammer, White Lightning.
Okay.
Black Hammer and White Lightning. Go just Google, YouTube the trailer.
Okay.
It's worth it. But Major League. 1989. Yeah. I'm a fan.
Sure.
But as I said earlier, the story has not holes. It just there's parts of it that are very unnecessary.
Oh, yeah.
But we start out in the opening credits over a very dank, I guess, is that the term the kids are using? Dank?
Dank.
A dank version of Cleveland, which is just called Cleveland.
Yeah, just Cleveland.
One of only like three shots that were actually in Cleveland.
Oh, of course.
The movie, the primary, the principal photography, as we have on the screen right now, all of the Indians' home games are Milwaukee.
Oh, really?
Home of the Brewers. They couldn't actually work around the actual Indian schedule to
That's
film
funny.
In Cleveland. So they kind of, they retrofitted the Milwaukee Stadium. They had to take the big beer thing down and stuff
right.
like that, which even made Uecker's part even funnier because he is the play-by-play guy for the Brewers.
Yeah.
The right. Milwaukee Brewers. Yeah. So it was pretty much like just staying at home. We are introduced to Rachel Phelps, the
yep.
former Vegas showgirl.
Yep.
Who married the owner of the Cleveland Indians.
And he just passed.
He just passed. She inherited it.
Which I do appreciate. I think I like the setup for her as a villain,
mm-hmm.
right? Where it's just like... Yeah, I don't care about Cleveland.
Right.
Like, I'm now in charge of this team. And so, yeah, well, I'm going to do what I want.
A lot of this comes from actual real life.
Okay.
David S. Ward, who wrote and directed the film, he made the film because he's a lifelong Cleveland Indians fan, and he said this was his only way of seeing the Indians win anything.
Yeah.
So he made a movie literally so he could see his baseball team
That's
win.
Funny.
Which the more I thought about it, felt very much like the Farrelly
Fever Pitch
and the Farrelly Brothers, which the Red Sox fucked up for him by winning.
Yeah, I know.
Like it was, they were hoping that was their way of giving Red Sox fans a happy ending, and then the Red Sox actually gave them a happy
ending.
Well,
the funny part is that they weren't going to win in the original script of Fever Pitch.
That's right.
They were not going to win.
They were a losing team.
They were going to lose at the end, and we were going to realize that it's like, oh, at the end of the day, Red Sox fans are still passionate, and you know, and we feel good that way.
Right.
But yeah, no, they had to change the ending because they won, and it was just, and that's why they snuck out at the World Series.
So Rachel Phelps has a plan in the beginning as she's meeting with the upper management of the
right.
Indians. And the plan basically is to put together this team of Cleveland Indians that are so bad
yep.
that attendance will drop below, I believe the number was 800,000 for the season.
Yeah, something like that.
And that's her out clause in the lease with the city in order to move the team to Miami where she already had a deal.
Right.
This comes from an actual story. In the 70s, basically the owner of the Minnesota Twins had an out clause in his contract that if the attendance dropped below 1.4 million for the season, the team could relocate its team to Miami.
Okay.
That's where he got the idea for the story.
It's a good idea.
Sure. Obviously that didn't happen.
Right.
And Twins are still in Minnesota. They are, right?
Yes.
I don't follow baseball that closely.
Yeah, they're still a thing.
And a lot of the players are obviously based on certain players. I always liked... Wade Boggs has become a mythical character for me lately.
Okay.
Especially with the Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And I told my whole Vegas story about the Boggs challenge at the Golden Knights game.
Right.
But again, Boggs is referenced in this. It's part of Serrano's backstory.
Yeah.
Because Wade Boggs is one of those famous players that always ate fried chicken before every game.
Right.
Hence the bring a live chicken. Willie Mays Hayes shows up with a bucket of KFC for him.
Right.
Here's a whole chicken for you. Then we're introduced to probably my favorite part, with the exception of the last, like, I don't know, 20 minutes or so of the movie.
Yeah.
My favorite part was spring training.
Oh, yeah.
And introducing ourselves to all of the, as you said, the ragtag group.
The ragtag group. And it was really funny and having Wesley Snipes show up as Willie Mays Hayes. And that was really fun. And you realize just like...
Behringer's shit-faced in Mexico. Lou Brown's running a tire,
yeah.
tire store. Ricky Vaughn is in jail.
Yep.
Roger Dorn is just the contracted player who's just bad enough to stay on the team, basically.
Yeah, right.
Which I love the manager who's with Lou Brown said, I thought we didn't have any high-priced talent. He goes, don't worry, Dorn's just high-priced.
Yeah, right.
Fantastic. Right.
Yeah, he's a good hitter, but he can't field, you know.
Oh, and he
doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to.
Which is weird.
It's one of those things that you look at him, it's like Dorn was probably a good baseball player in his prime.
Right.
But then just got so rich he
stopped caring.
Yeah, he cared more about the lifestyle than the game.
Yeah, right. Which is weird because, you know, Cleveland's in the AL.
Yeah.
So there's a designated hitter. Why aren't you just the designated hitter? If you're so bad at playing third...
I don't think he's a great hitter.
That was the whole thing, is that he was a good hitter and a terrible fielder.
Oh, is that what it was?
That was his whole thing, is that he was...
You really don't see Roger at bat much.
No.
Which was one of the... Actually, that just sparked... One of the many things that David S. Ward did... I mean, these are actors.
Yeah.
Some of them actually can portray ball players effectively.
Yeah.
Some of them take tricks.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen, for example, legitimately was throwing in the mid to high 80s.
Oh,
like,
of course.
Charlie Sheen, like, that's why, if you notice, it's something that you don't pick up on unless you know how movies are made, especially sports movies. If you have a pitcher, an actor portraying a pitcher who can't throw a ball,
yeah,
he's filmed very tight in close-ups.
Yes.
And then you just see, like, the ball, or you just see the catcher's mitt catching the ball. But Sheen was shot in all full body wide shots because he legitimately was a good player. He was offered a college scholarship.
Yeah, he could actually pay.
He decided to, you know, go make millions in movies, and because you know, my dad's Martin Sheen.
Yeah, right.
And I like drugs a hell of a lot more than I do school.
Yeah.
But he was legit. Serrano, Dennis Haysbert, who went on to huge fame with the Allstate commercials and 24. There was a little TV show called 24.
Oh, yeah, he was really good at 24.
Where he was a president. But he that closing in the end when he hits the home run.
Yep.
Legitimate home run.
He
actually knocked it out of the stadium.
Good.
And so he was, again, another one that could portray it. One of the biggest disappointments in my research was how awful of an athlete Wesley Snipes is.
Oh, which is surprising because he's such an accomplished martial artist.
No, he's not. Yeah. No, he's not. That is a myth. He is an actor who gets cast in these athletic roles.
Right.
But he's not an athlete. He can't run for shit, which is why they never show him outside of slow motion.
Yeah, right. He's
also, the same effect was used in White Man Can't Jump.
Right.
Whenever he has the basketball,
so
it goes to slow-mo.
Right. And so there is a difference. My friend...
They couldn't show... If you notice, in the movie, they never show Wesley Snipes throwing a baseball because he was atrocious at
it. Oh, of course he was. Of course. My friend is a very accomplished martial artist and also one of the least athletic people I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's one of those
things... It's crazy.
It's almost like the Jean-Claude Van Damme thing where it's like, he was a ballerina that got cast as an action star.
Yeah, right.
I see Snipes at this point after doing my research. He was probably like a theater kid that was just really into working out.
Right.
And he got cast in these athletic roles. But then they're like, oh, shit, he's not even a fast runner.
Yeah, right.
Like, he was based on Ricky Henderson.
Right. Oh, he was supposed to be the fastest man alive.
And just, he's not fast, which is why they only filmed him in slow motion. And that's why especially in the spring training scene where he wakes up outside.
Yeah.
Because they kick him out of spring training on the first day. And then he wakes up and runs into the sprint line.
Yeah.
The other two guys running next to him look goofy as shit because they were basically running in slow motion
while
being filmed in slow motion.
Yeah, right.
So it looks even more exaggerated. It was a fucking nightmare.
I could imagine.
Tom Berenger, who was effective as a hitter.
Yep.
His character was based mostly on Carlton Fisk. But he couldn't throw as a catcher.
Yeah, okay.
And that's actually something, when I watched it this morning, what I really picked up on, because I had done already the research, so I started watching all the fucking actors try to be baseball players, all of them overthrow.
Yeah.
You can see, because their release is like way up by their head instead of down here.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, if you're throwing at somebody, you want your release to be in line with them.
Yeah, correct.
But they're throwing, like, from second base to first base, they're launching it into the stands.
Yeah, right.
And there's some behind the scenes footage in the DVD where you can clearly see the ball just getting launched into the crowd.
Of course.
they were not great throwers, with the exception of Charlie Sheen. What was the actor's name? There's also the pitcher in it, who is basically a sports movie Hall of Famer, Chelsea Ross, who played Eddie Harris.
Yeah.
He also was in Hoosiers and in Rudy.
Oh, good for him.
Sports movie Hall of Fame right there, Chelsea Ross.
Good for him.
And one of my favorite characters in this entire movie. He's just that old grizzled veteran.
Yeah.
He's got the, as Charlie Sheen put it, what's that shit on your chest?
Yeah.
And he's the guy who's doing all the tricks. He's got the
Crisco.
The Bardol, Crisco, Vagisil.
Yeah.
It's like I can rub jalapenos up my nose and lobe the ball with snot.
Yeah. He's going to throw snot on the ball?
And then he gets into a whole religious battle with Serrano.
Yeah, right.
You tell me Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
Oh, man. And then, it was, the characters are fun. I feel like we just didn't maximize them.
And no, and as it's on the screen right now, we just have Major League running because I was listening to the commentary track before Liam came over. The Rene Russo character. Let's just jump right in.
Let's do it.
Let's do head first because we get, there's cut day. Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't know enough about baseball to know if cut day is an actual thing, if they actually red
tag people.
Yeah, I know
it's a thing. I don't know. It
seems a bit excessive.
I don't think that there's, like, the way that they did it.
Like,
where
I think I see more of, like, an assistant coach or an assistant manager coming on just kind of, like, tapping a guy and be like, manager wants to see you.
Well, because that's how they do it in football, is they're like, hey, the coach wants to see you. Bring your playbook.
Not, like, so exposed to the entire locker room. Like, you know, it's you know.
Yeah, I would assume it would be more subtle. Maybe in the 80s
It makes for a funny bit in the movie, though.
It does. And ultimately, I think that's why they did it the way they did it, so that, you know, they could mess with them. And
we could also get that Vaughn and Roger Dorn fight.
Right.
To add their tension.
Right, which
but in
seemed
the end,
weird.
In the end, surprisingly, all the main characters make the team.
Yeah. Oh, shocking.
And,
shocking.
Jake Taylor, Ricky Vaughn, and Willie Mays Hayes go out for a very nice dinner.
Yep.
In Cleveland.
Because they're, which is shocking.
Yeah, you can find a nice restaurant,
A French restaurant in Cleveland?
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Very nice establishment. Full house, too.
Yeah.
And we, you know, Vaughn's wearing a tie with his whole sleeveless biker gimmick.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic because house rules, as you do.
Yep, of
and,
course.
And we are introduced to a former, very famous supermodel, turned first acting role, Rene Russo.
Yeah.
As Jake Taylor's love interest.
Right. Which seems like the most nonsensical thing in this movie.
Here's the thing. If it was just that scene.
Right.
Okay. I'm okay with it. He runs.
Yeah.
Because he did play for them at one time.
Yeah,
because,
right.
Because they you know, like, oh, he was an all-star in Boston. I think they say something like, we had him 2 years ago or something. Maybe I'm confused with Dorn. But either way.
The point is,
he's been around the block once or twice.
Right, he's a washout.
Right,
and that's his whole thing. This is his like second shot at the big leagues.
Last at best,
and it's like it's fine, and like it kind of adds depth to him, especially because he was like, yeah, I had this woman, and then now she's with some other guy because
Let's be honest. When we get his story, it's not like he was the best boyfriend.
No.
Ever. You know, he was, they broke up because he was caught fucking a flight attendant.
Right.
And his excuse for it was, well, she bet me that she had a better body than you. Not a great thing.
That's not a great reason.
Hanging on to it is weird.
Yeah.
Apparently, Rene Russo set up a surprise birthday party when they were dating for him, and a woman showed up with paternity tests instead of him.
Right.
Not great. I mean, Jake Taylor was, he was not a great boyfriend.
No.
And he doesn't redeem himself.
No, he doesn't.
Because their relationship is not only the worst part of the movie,
right?
Because it takes away from what we want to be seeing. We want right. like.
I care about the baseball
Charlie
team.
Charlie Sheen and Wesley Snipes are maybe in 20 minutes of this 90-minute movie right. because most of it is their fucking relationship.
Right, and I would rather...
And I like Renee Russo as an actress.
Yeah.
But their whole her whole story arc could be deleted
so
and help the movie.
So we have this interesting thing that happens with Charlie Sheen's character, where by the end of the movie, he... By the end of the movie, he is just adored by the Cleveland fans. Sure. And we never really, like, see that.
Well, it's montage.
It's a montage, but it's like...
And it's montage because of...
Because of the Rene Russo stuff. Right. And so it's like, I would rather watch this. I would rather watch Charlie Sheen. The other part about how he's has this bugaboo with the Yankees, right? And well, he can't get over the Yankees.
Clue Haywood.
Yeah, you know, and it's
Clue
just...
Haywood. And I, let's take a pause for Clue Haywood for a moment.
Okay.
Because it's the person playing him... is Peter Vukovich.
Oh, jeez.
And Peter Vukovich is actually a American League Cy Young Award winner from 1982 with the Milwaukee Brewers.
Okay, good for him.
And he was at this point obviously retired. But also, Clue Haywood and the relief pitcher in the final game, the Duke,
yeah.
horrible Yankee offenders.
Yes.
Because as we know from as being from Boston and Johnny Damon, you get signed with the Yankees,
no
you
beard.
Gotta no beard, no you gotta clean your shit up, and their hair is all shaggy. Clue Haywood has the big goatee.
Yeah,
it's like yeah, that wouldn't fly, but it works for the movie.
It works for the movie, but
and Clue Haywood is like one of my favorite, like that guy fucking
right.
moments. It's like
I feel like yeah, that's true.
And all of, again, watching the DVD, 100% like it was a character that was just supposed to be a big mean bastard that didn't really have lines,
right,
and just improv'd everything.
Yeah.
Including the, hey, Taylor, how's your wife and my kids?
Yeah, right.
Like, that's his first, that's his introduction. It's like, okay, you're the bad guy.
Yeah, you're the bad guy.
You're the piece of shit. Yeah. I like this guy.
He's fun. You know, Willie Mays Hayes, I would have liked to have seen more with him. We have no idea where he came from and, like, his motivations for any of this.
Well, clearly it's to play baseball.
Right, clearly it's to play baseball. But there isn't any other motivations behind it. And the other part is... You know, he wants to be a big-time, big home run hitter, and at no point does he learn how to do that.
Well, no. I mean, it's one of those things, and this is a team that very much is it's established through the Lou Brown character, that it's a team that has to work within their limitations.
Right.
So it's picked up immediately. Willie Mays Hayes can't hit.
Yeah, right.
He pops it straight up 100% of the time. But he's right. fast as shit.
Yeah, he's just got to put it on the ground.
Put it on the ground, leg it out. That's your role in this.
Yeah,
you're a leadoff hitter. Get the fuck on base.
Right.
That is your role.
And it works in the movie that we got. But I would have liked to have seen him evolve.
In the sequel, he actually is a home run hitter.
Okay.
He does evolve to that point.
Yeah.
Basically, the Omar Epps version of Willie Mays Hayes gives you a little bit of what you're looking for.
Right. It's annoying.
They do get back to his roots of being just a get on base, fucking steal a base type of hitter. But in the first arc, he's become this superstar athlete who then develops a home run hit.
Right. It's annoying because the Rene Russo stuff is just so stalkerish.
Oh, 100%.
You know?
Right from Jump Street, he's like, I'm not leaving till you give me your number. And it's like, well, that's the epitome of I'm going to give you a false number.
Yeah, right. And she does.
Clear.
And she does.
Spot Welding, I think, was the company.
Yeah, right.
it was
like
a fucking welding company.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. She gives him a fake number because...
He follows her to work at the library.
Right.
Makes a total scene in the library, including a great bit of business where apparently one of the crutches of their relationship was she wanted him to read Moby Dick.
Yeah.
So he's walking through and he goes, I'll check it out now. Is this the whale section?
Yeah, right.
Jane Taylor is just a dick.
Right. That's the other thing.
He's not going to change.
Well, and it's just like,
okay.
Like, what's going to happen? You're going to read Moby Dick and everything's going to be okay?
Apparently.
You know?
And I love the fact that he ends up reading the comic version of Moby Dick.
Yeah, right. He doesn't read the real Moby Dick. You know, and then he follows her to what he thinks is her house.
Yep.
And then basically gets to the place... Then leaves.
Well, he gets to the place. He watches the elevator numbers and sees that she goes up to the sixth floor.
Right.
Then he goes across the street to the bar.
Right.
Has a few beers.
And then decides he's going to go back.
It also goes from day to night, so he had quite a few beers.
Yeah.
And then he goes back. He takes the elevator up to the sixth floor. Now, I have a problem with this whole storyline.
Yep.
But I have a huge problem with this whole apartment building.
Yeah.
It looks like it's in a rundown neighborhood, but it's also Cleveland, so every neighborhood could be
right.
No offense, well, Cleveland. Your city doesn't photograph well.
No, it doesn't.
But he goes up to the sixth floor, and the elevator door opens to her apartment. This tells me one of two things. Either the elevator system has the worst security ever because
correct.
Anyone can just walk into your apartment now.
Right.
Or there's only six apartments in that building.
Right, that each
Either
floor...
Either way, they should have a card.
Yeah, each floor is its own apartment, but yeah, you
also,
should...
Also, what if it wasn't?
Right.
What if there was 20 apartments on the sixth floor? Is he going to go...
Yeah,
knock,
right.
Knock,
oh,
knock,
yeah.
Knock, knock, knock to yes. each fucking one until he finds her?
Right, exactly.
This
so
wasn't a well-thought-out plan wasn't, by Stalker Taylor.
No, it wasn't. And then we find out that it's her fiancé instead.
Correct.
And so that should have been the end of it, right?
Yeah, but the fiancé realizes Jake's game and kind of wants to show him up.
Right.
He even says it straight to him. He's like, I wanted to show Lynn that, you know, what she has now is a lot better than what you're fucking offering.
Right.
Which is league minimum.
Yes,
which,
right.
Again, did a little research.
Yeah.
League minimum is not as bad as people make it out to be.
Oh, no.
Like, Jake says it in a way that makes it sound like he's making $10 an hour.
Right, where he should just say, he should have just said the number because the number is impressive.
In 1989, Major League minimum was $68,000.
Yeah.
And the average household income in 1990 was roughly $30,000. So he wasn't making a bad living, which also begs to ask why he was sharing an apartment with Ricky Vaughn.
I know.
I get it. They need it for the plot convenience of having right. Roger Dorn's wife walk past Jake. But why was either one of them sharing an apartment at $68,000 right. a year?
I think it's because you're getting game checks. You don't get that money up front.
Still.
So, yeah.
It's Cleveland.
Oh, yeah.
They could both have a one bedroom
somewhere
for a
yes.
game.
Yes, you're right.
You know, for a game check.
You're right. Because, yeah, those games...
I know I'm right.
You know, that's not even
they
talking...
They were making too much goddamn money.
Yeah.
Rachel Phelps is a very generous woman.
Yeah, right, of course. And so, yeah, it's just... And then he leaves, and yep. then he follows her to her real house.
Well, he sees her at a game.
Right.
He sees her in the stands, and as soon as they make eye contact, she fucks right off.
Right.
Which should be a sign...
Maybe
she wanted to see you play again, but the fact that she ran when
right.
you made eye contact is like, eh, fuck it.
Right.
No. And again, another scene I have huge problems with. So yes, he, yeah. he chased her to the parking
yep,
lot.
In a go-kart.
And he goes, I need a car. And he goes, take the bullpen car. A security guy says, take the bullpen car. So, hilarious. He's driving a giant baseball with a fucking Cleveland
yeah.
Indians hat on.
Right.
And I've driven go-karts, golf carts.
Right.
They don't really max out more than 15 miles an hour.
No. There's no way
he's driving down city streets and keeping pace with a car.
Keeping pace with a car enough to arrive moments after she does.
Correct. She didn't even turn her lights on. He was already up the stairs.
Right. And so then this
one... And then proceeds to not rape her, but...
Basically does.
But also, I mean, her dialogue in this... tells me that Lynn, who is Rene Russo's character, isn't a great person either.
No.
Because she just goes, and I get it.
Well,
this is the romantic storyline they were telling in the 80s. It was a different time, folks.
Clearly.
But she is engaged. She has broken up with him. She has given him many reasons why they're not going to get back together. And then the last line she has as the camera watches her feet get dragged away after he rips
yeah,
her skirt
right.
off is, we were always good at this.
Yeah.
Not a great excuse because you're still going to go through with your wedding because later he goes back to her apartment
and it's gone.
And it's gutted.
Yeah, right.
It's
well,
gone.
Well,
which,
we,
again, does he have a key?
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
Does anybody lock their fucking doors in Cleveland?
We skipped that part where she goes into her apartment and up the stairs and then is just sitting on the couch. And then he just walks in.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, that. So you're telling me the order of events is that this guy showed up at her house.
Yep.
Like, we can't even talk about the second time where she doesn't live there anymore,
yeah.
right? How does he get in then?
Because she's out.
Because she's out. But he walks into her apartment and surprises her and then proceeds to have sex with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she leaves and goes, fuck all.
Yeah, she goes back to that very nice apartment.
Right.
That very swanky apartment that doesn't have a key for the elevator, apparently.
Right, but it's just like, holy crap, that is the definition of date rape, man. like,
yeah, Jake Taylor, stalker, rapist, ball player.
You stalked this woman back to her house, went in without permission.
Twice.
At least this time. You went into her apartment without permission. Then put her in a situation because you end up pinning her up against a wall. And then basically she just has sex with you, but then gets the fuck out before.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that didn't sound, that didn't seem consensual at all.
Yeah, Renee Russo just wanted some of that strange. She knew that, as she said, we were always good at this. Cool. But you do have a fiance.
Right. Well, I mean, and then it gets to the end.
At the end of the day, cheating's cheating. Yeah. Whether you're good at it or not.
Right. You know, well, I mean? And then the part about it that's probably the worst is at the end of the movie.
Oh, we'll get there. We'll get there. Because there's a whole side story that was actually deleted from the movie.
Yeah.
We'll get there. Christ, where are we
so,
in the movie?
They've decided that they're going to try and win it all because they're aware of the Miami plans.
Yes. Okay. So, Charlie, the GM.
Yeah.
Who's another unsung character in this movie. He's the guy who, he loves the team. He worked for the team before Rachel Phelps' husband died.
Yeah.
And now she's kept him on as general manager. I think he was actually the manager of the team.
Yeah.
So he was a Lou Brown under her husband.
Right.
But she kept him on as personnel. And now it's like he has to do her bidding.
Yeah,
basically.
Right. He's a minion.
And he's not even allowed to clap at games. There's a lot of like very emasculating situations for him. And he tells Lou, because the team's starting to show glimmers of hope.
Yeah, they're a 500 baseball team.
Right. And even Lou says in this conversation, he's like, we have a couple potential all-stars on this team. I have real faith in this team. And he goes, Rachel Phelps is never going to let it happen, and lays out the whole Miami plan. Thus, we get the cardboard stand-up because she was an ex-Vegas showgirl. That's how they got the naked photo of her.
Yeah.
And they dress it with parts that can be peeled off. And he's, I don't know, he says, like, we need like 62 games or something.
30-something.
30-something games. So there's 30-something pieces on air, and each one they win, they pop off a thing, everybody has a laugh.
Yeah.
And we go on. And the team actually starts showing signs of life. Vaughn gets glasses.
Yeah, because we find out that he...
The reason he's wild thing is because he can't see shit.
Yeah, right. He needs glasses.
Yeah. He's basically like a blind person shooting a machine gun.
Yeah, right.
He's got 100 mile an hour fastball and can't see dick.
Yeah, right. And so he gets the glasses and then he can pitch and that's great.
Yeah. Dorn decides to man up and start taking balls to the chest.
Yeah, right.
Phrasing. Yeah. I don't know. Willie Mays starts actually sliding into the base as opposed to missing the base.
Yeah, right.
That was a problem up front.
Yep.
Also, let's talk about his dating life for a minute. Because we don't, as you said, we don't explore Willie Mays Hayes and his backstory. But he does the, I bought 100 of these gloves for every base I steal. And then we get a scene of him
nailing them to the wall.
What looks like a child's bedroom because it's a twin bed and it has a graffiti style spray paint
Willie
of his
Mays
name.
Hayes.
And then he's hammering gloves over the bed. What's a woman to think?
Yeah, right.
You walk into that situation. It's like, first of all, do you have a twin fucking bed?
Yeah.
You're a baseball player that we found out is making at least $68,000 a year.
Right. What is happening?
What's with the twin bed, pal? And what's with the gloves?
Yeah.
What's with the weird black leather gloves all over your fucking house?
Right.
I run fast.
Oh. Neat.
That's a sign of a criminal.
Yeah, right. Right. Neat.
So a team starts winning, and because of the Rene Russo storyline, we montage through it.
Yeah, of course.
I did find it funny on the last viewing. I actually noticed one of the parks was Fenway.
Yeah.
So they did bounce around. Like I said, the majority of the filming was done in Milwaukee at the Brewers Stadium.
Yeah.
But they did bounce around just for road games and stuff, and one of them was at Fenway. And then we're pushing to the pennant.
Well, the funniest thing about this, the way it sets up, is so they were in first place.
Well, that's the thing. The montage is showing them grow.
Right.
And the montage is also showing them aggravate Rachel Phelps more. So correct. She starts taking stuff away.
Right. So
it starts as simple as just, you know,
the plane.
The whirlpool.
Oh, yeah.
She's not fixing the plumbing in the stadium. They don't have hot water in the shower.
Right.
They don't have towels. Then it's like, oh, well, we're still coddling them. The plane is a busted piece of shit.
Yeah. Then they don't get a plane and it's a bus.
And the bus, it looks like the one from Slapshot.
Yeah.
So she's trying to take every luxury away, and it's only driving them further together. Because you see moments, even on the plane, between, I know Dorn is still fucking with Charlie Sheen's character, but he's doing it in a teammate kind of way where they're, like, they're reading comics and he throws a Crime and Punishment one of them.
Right.
But it, but when they first started, Dorn had his, you know, sleeping mask on. He's, you know,
yeah,
he's out.
Care.
He was singular. Now he's part of the team.
Right.
So they are, through the misery, they are coming together as a ball club.
Right. But so the main, like the last thing at the end of the movie is a game between the Cleveland Indians and the New York Yankees.
New York Yankees have been the big baddie the whole,
right,
the whole time.
Right. Well, and to be fair, it is the New York Yankees prior to 2004.
Hashtag evil empire.
Hashtag evil empire.
Hashtag Yankees suck.
Hashtag Yankees suck.
Hashtag we're from Boston.
Hashtag we're from Boston. But look, I'm not saying that the Yankees haven't, you know, done too well this this century.
Yeah, yeah, I'm okay with it.
But we're all right.
We're all right with it here in Boston.
Anyway,
we got a fever pitch.
They're having
a few times.
Yeah, they're having a look, and they blow right now. But that's fine.
Fine.
We
won the series last year.
They're having a one game playoff to get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right.
This whole movie is based around winning the pennant.
Right.
I mean, again, it is paid off in the sequel. What actually happened?
Yeah. They got swept. I don't know.
They lost the World Series. I think they lost the World Series.
Okay.
Or didn't make the World Series.
Yeah.
They definitely didn't win the whole thing. And whatever did happen in that playoff is paid off through the Ricky Vaughn character and his girlfriend at the time.
Okay.
Like, there is a quick explanation, a backstory explanation, if you will, whatever.
Yeah. The point is that the Indians are hosting this one game playoff.
Oh, and Ricky Vaughn fucked Dorn's wife.
Oh, yeah, that happened too.
So now there's even more tension.
Because she saw Dorn
on TV
canoodling. Yeah, canoodling with a side piece.
Come on, Dorn. You've been in the league long enough. You know you don't bring your side piece into the fucking
clubhouse.
You have him wait at the hotel.
Right.
That's side piece 101.
Yeah, you got caught on camera, bro. You should know that.
You have a travel thing? Mike Wentz, side piece 101.
Yeah, right. Right, I got a travel thing.
Hashtag side piece.
Hashtag side piece. You know, but so she decides that she's going to sleep with Ricky Vaughn.
Of course.
And so.
Of course. Why not sleep with the guy that your husband obviously hates?
Yeah, right. And so that's the thing that happens. But the Indians were in first place and the Yankees caught them. Like, that's how this worked out.
Right.
You know, which is crazy because this should have been at Yankee Stadium. But we needed to get the, like, Cleveland fans all showing up to the stadium and kind of paying off that.
So, and because, obviously, this was filmed in the 80s, and CGI wasn't really a thing, if it was at all at this point, 30,000 extras.
Yep.
Packing this stadium in Milwaukee, and a couple things came out of it. So when the team's about to take the field, and the whole stadium's just rumbling.
Yeah.
Just fucking erupting. Dennis Haysbert was standing there covered in goosebumps, getting all emotional. And Steve Yeager, who is the ultimate unsung hero of this movie, he was the technical advisor.
Okay.
And he was also the third base coach in the movie.
Okay.
And he was Tom Berenger's stunt double for catching.
Okay.
He was a major league catcher. And he looked at Serrano or Dennis Haysbert, and he goes, "That's what it's like 162 times a year, man. Get the fuck out there." And it was kind of, it's one of those things where he was like, "Yeah, this is the life we all live. Just 30,000 people going absolutely batshit." That was one. Charlie Sheen has gone on record many times about this movie, including, unfortunately, I never was able to lock it down and record it because of CBS rules, because I'm
working
for CBS radio at the time. But I had a string of text messages with Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, okay.
True story. So, let me tell that real quick. Back when he had his breakdown, remember when he quit 2.5
yep.
Men and had the public breakdown and went on the fucking Tiger Blood tour and all that shit? Okay, I was working for a morning show here in Boston, a radio morning show. Our producer was one of the best producers I've ever known in radio. If we wanted to get somebody on the phone, there's a good chance he could get it.
Okay.
So, here's the chain of events that led to me having Charlie Sheen's phone number. So, at the time, our producer had a relationship with Michael Lohan, meaning we had Michael Lohan on the phone because whenever Lindsay Lohan was in trouble, that was the one you went to because he was a media whore.
Yeah, right.
So when Charlie Sheen has his breakdown, he sends Michael Lohan a text being like, "Hey, any chance you have any way of getting in touch with Charlie Sheen?"
Yeah, right.
Michael Lohan gave him the number of a madam. The madam gave him a number of a whore. The whore gave him Charlie Sheen's phone number.
Great.
We're sitting in the studio, half believing it's real, half believing it's a fucking burner phone or something. And we just were like, well, let's call it.
See what happens.
Hit record. Let's call it.
Right.
The second the voice came on the phone and said, hello, my heart dropped. It was Charlie fucking Sheen.
That's so funny.
And he's like, what's going on? And we literally go, oh, blah, blah, blah from Boston. He's like, do I got an interview with you guys? He's like, yep.
Yep.
He goes, all right, well, let me get off the other line. About 30 seconds, comes back. What's going on, guys? We did about a 45-minute interview with Charlie Sheen.
Right.
And we were the only ones at the time that had that exclusive. He was scorching the earth.
Yeah, of course.
And it was like right as it happened. It was like a day after it happened. He hadn't even announced a tour. He hadn't done any of his shit. He hadn't done any fucking interviews. We were the only ones. We do it. We do the interview. We tell the boss. 2 and a Half Men is owned by CBS.
Yep.
He's suing CBS.
Can't use it.
We are owned by CBS Radio.
Can't use it. Yeah.
So we leave the studio on cloud fucking nine. This is the biggest get at that time you could get.
Right.
We go marching down all happy as pigs and shit. We tell the boss. The boss goes, let me run it up the chain.
Yeah.
So we go to a coffee shop around the corner from the station. And we're there, and he's running around. He's going to management. Management, I guess, went all the way to New York.
Yeah, they had to.
The head of CBS Radio. And we're sitting in the coffee shop. We get a text, come back to the station. Okay. So we come back, and we're told that we are allowed to run the interview once without any edits and without any context. Right. All we can say is...
sat down with Charlie Sheen.
...is we have an exclusive Charlie Sheen interview, and here it is, and play it.
Yeah.
And we're never allowed to rebroadcast it. It's not going to be posted to the website, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I still have his number.
Yeah.
Because our producer gave me his number.
Yeah, right.
And I'm, at the time, I'm living with a couple guys. Will is one of them.
Yep.
And, you know, there's those nights where we're sitting there and Will's like, text Charlie Sheen.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just see what he's... Because he's going batshit at this point.
Right.
He's doing podcasts. He's doing
doing everything.
And I'm sending him texts. I'm like, hey, it's Mike from Boston, from the radio station. And he's like, yeah, man, when are you going to have me back on? I'd love to do stuff. Like, we don't have to talk about 2 and a Half Men. We'll talk about whatever you want. We want to talk about baseball. We want to talk about whatever.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Charlie Sheen.
So, I know, exactly. And I'll get to why I don't have the number anymore.
His phone broke.
So, there was like full fucking text messages just about... You know, how Major League was so fucking awesome. It was like a dream come true for him because he was a baseball fan his whole life. I mean, he's a legit, like, hardcore Cincinnati Reds fan. You know, he was a baseball player. All this fucking stuff is happening, and I can't do anything with it.
Yeah, right.
Because of legal reasons. I would get fired. I can't do anything with it. All of a sudden, another morning show in Boston gets a hold of the number. Again, it didn't take us much
effort. Yeah, right.
It was going to get out eventually. They get a hold of it. They post it online. It spreads like fucking wildfire.
Of course it does.
And immediately when I saw it go online, I sent a text and it just went nowhere. I actually called. Disconnected.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yeah.
Like, I was so upset. There was one point during my string of texts with him that I went to a bachelor party in Old Orchard Beach. And I just, on a whim, I sent him a text. I go, literally, wild thing. Grab yourself a chopper and come to Old Orchard Beach, Maine. We're partying. I didn't get a response.
Yeah, of course.
That was the type of shit I was sending him. And it was one of the coolest, like, 3 weeks of my life. Just having that text conversation relationship with Charlie Sheen. Moving forward, him coming out in this final game.
Right.
As wild thing. Not only did we talk about it through text, but he's also done many interviews saying it literally is a highlight of his life.
Yeah.
Having 30,000, because they had to do multiple takes, obviously.
Right, of course.
So having 30,000 people going absolutely fucking berserk.
Yeah.
And he's playing baseball, which was, you know, literally his childhood dream.
Right.
And he's the hero baseball player, the hero pitcher, and he can actually throw.
Yeah.
Sidebar, he also has admitted that during the filming, he was doing massive amounts of steroids to get his pitch faster.
Okay.
And you can kind of, I mean, he's pretty kind of.
Yeah, he's kind of big.
It's kind of the beefy sheen,
yeah,
you know, if you will. But, so this also was one of those moments that has kind of become polarizing. We haven't talked a lot about Uecker, and I think we should at the end. But this was another one of those polarized, because he had a polarizing line, the just a bit outside,
yeah,
that's used by Major League Baseball announcers constantly. Anyone on SportsCenter throws that line out.
Right.
You know, it's like putting on the foil for Slapshot.
Yeah.
It's just become part of pop culture lexicon. Well, the other thing that had a real impact on baseball was closing pitchers coming out to entrance music.
Right.
It started off with a few pitchers changing their number to 99 and actually trying to call himself Wild Thing. But then, I mean, here in Boston, I think the biggest one was probably Papelbon and,
yeah,
and shipping up to Boston.
Yeah, that was that. But before that, Mariano Rivera came, yep, out to Enter Sandman.
And it started here in 1989 with fucking Charlie Sheen, yeah, and Wild Thing. And that kind of, it was, he said in interviews that it's really, it was one of the best compliments he's ever gotten. That wasn't like a compliment.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, imitation is the best form of flattery.
Right,
and
exactly.
Having major league relievers or closers putting entrance music because of this movie,
yeah,
was one of the coolest things for him.
That being said, I'm so glad that Kimbrel doesn't have a job because I hate him. Craig Kimbrel, mm-hmm, former closer for the Boston Red Sox.
Fair enough.
His elbow thing is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
His elbow thing?
Yeah, so Craig Kimbrel.
Again, I don't follow baseball very,
yeah,
closely.
He does a thing.
I follow movie baseball because it only takes 90 minutes to watch a game.
Yeah, right.
And I can watch a whole season.
You watch a whole season. He does this thing where he like goes like this.
Oh, you mean his like his release, his whole pitching thing?
Yeah. And so he does this, and then he stands up and then pitches the ball.
Weird.
It does. This doesn't have anything to do with, and if, for those of you who are just listening to the audio version, he's like holding his arm like a scarecrow.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's almost as if he's in a body cast.
Yeah, like he's in a body cast or something. And it's just, it's really stupid. It's just really stupid. Wild Thing. But Wild Thing comes out and closes it down. He closes it down. We end up getting the full circle moment.
Well, they had Eddie Harris doing the game.
Right.
Because as they said in one of the bus scenes with Lou Brown, he has a better record against the Yankees than,
yep,
and Vaughn is snake bit by the Yankees.
Yeah.
He just can't get by him. So even though it's in the rotation, they're going with Harris. Everyone's cool with it. Harris is getting into that, the waning parts of the game.
Right.
And Clue Haywood is up next. And Clue Haywood is that big baddie on the Yankees.
Yeah, right.
Bring in Vaughn. He's 300 mile an hour strikes, knocks him out.
Yep.
Now we have to get the actual close of the game.
Right. It's a very well done moment. It's really fun. I really like it. Willie Mays Hayes basically is kind of the star here.
The Duke, the Yankees reliever who, as Harry Doyle says, he threw at his kid at a father-son game once.
Yeah, right. I mean,
just a general piece of shit.
Yeah, mean
and
bastard.
Looks the part.
Yeah, big Texas mean bastard. And so basically, this is a really fun at
bat.
Not
Duke Santos.
No, not Duke Santos. Really fun. The most realistic of the like haha gotchas.
Okay.
You know, because like, what was it? It was like rookie of the year. He threw the rosin bag.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And right. It's just like that wouldn't fly.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff like that.
That'd get you kicked out of a game.
Yeah, that would get you kicked out of a game. So there's stuff like that, which is like not great. Whereas this one, and Derek Jeter's in this. Who knew?
Yeah.
But
little trivia fact was mentioned as well, that number two is playing shortstop.
Yeah, and yeah. So you look at
the Yankees.
For the Yankees at, yeah, the end of the game. But
I will say this. This series of
events
is done
very well.
So well.
Right.
As far as dramatic sports moments. I mean, this Slapshot, Miracle. I'm rattling off hockey stuff because I'm a hockey guy. But,
yeah,
you know, Bull Durham, all these sports movies does the big,
yeah,
the big, our team's gonna win it, but they're gonna win it down to the wire,
dramatic
fashion.
Yeah,
and this does it so well between Wesley Snipes stealing the base,
yep,
and done again, it has to be done in slow motion because Wesley Snipes is not a fast runner,
yeah,
which is funny because he's running in slow mo, but when they cut to the guys in the dugout, they're all in like real time, like you know, cheering them on, like, come on, Willie, let's do it.
Yeah, right. You know? Right, right, right.
Jake Taylor calling a shot.
Yeah, that's the best part is Jake Taylor gets up there, calls a shot, calls
because they've set it up.
They did.
They foreshadowed that Jake Taylor would have a hero home run.
Right, exactly. Because he has the empty stadium and he
right
and
at the
points,
start of the season.
Yeah, and he points and
he does this whole thing.
Right, and so you immediately think, oh, he's gonna hit the home run here to win the game.
Sports movies have conditioned us to believe that Jake Taylor is gonna hit a home run.
Right, and win the game. And he bunts.
He bunts.
He bunts, which is awesome because he sprints out.
The old man runs his ass off.
Yeah. He old
literally almost dies.
Yeah. It's funny because he collapses, and if this movie was to like keep going, we would have found out that he can't walk anymore.
We also, okay, so he collapses. Now, I understand if you're running to first and you turn out.
Yeah.
But he just dropped straight.
Yeah.
Technically, the guy could have tagged him out.
Probably.
But that adds too much realism to this fictitious movie.
And so while that's all going on, Willie Mays Hayes is rounding third and stealing home.
He absolutely was.
You know, and so that's how we end up winning it, is that he's able to, you know, basically from second score on a bunt.
On a bunt.
You know.
Because he's the fastest man alive.
Because he's the fastest man alive.
The home run we touched on earlier from Serrano, who again was very snake bit because he could hit the straight ball very well.
Yeah, right.
Curve ball is, bat is scared.
Yeah.
Serrano and his bats.
Yeah.
They were a favorite as a kid, and they're a favorite as an adult.
Yeah.
I think they're even more so now as an adult. Because seeing the absurdity of it, seeing him and all his voodoo stuff, his whole locker with Joe Boo and the rum and the cigars.
Yeah, right.
And when Harris is trying to give a prayer, he fucking puts his cigar into something. It explodes. And he's like, I have to wake up bats. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? But you know there's weirdos in baseball like that.
Of course.
And then he finally hits the home run. And as we mentioned earlier, Dennis Haysbert actually was knocking out home runs out of fucking Milwaukee, which is amazing in its own right.
It is amazing.
But here's the question I have. He carries the bat with him. Why doesn't, like, everyone do that? That was one of the... Him rounding second, heading towards third, they're filming from behind, and he pumps his bat at the crowd, and they go, batshit. I'm like, you know, batshit.
Yeah.
But it's awesome!
I don't think you can bring the bat.
Looked it up.
You can?
It's an unwritten rule.
Oh, I hate those.
It's an unwritten rule that you have to drop your bat. But there's no actual Major League Baseball rules that say you can't carry. Technically, even if you don't hit a home run.
You can just run with the bat.
You can run with a bat. It's not logical because it's going to slow you down.
Yeah, right.
But technically, there's no rules that say you have to drop the bat. So I'm wondering why, like, Ortiz on his farewell tour that took 47 years.
Yeah, I know.
Didn't just carry his bat on every home run.
Pumping.
He was Serrano.
He was Serrano.
I mean, Jesus, he wasn't even a thing in 89. But they're fucking right there. Ortiz and Serrano are the same person.
Yeah, right, right.
So how he wasn't carrying a bat, I do remember, just another sidebar on the Ortiz thing. I remember I was sitting in a bar during his farewell fucking year. And the pregame ceremonies were just nauseating. Yeah. Every stadium he went to had to do a thing for him.
Oh, it was awful.
And they were playing the Toronto Blue Jays in Toronto. And he went out to the fucking pitcher's mound and did a little speech. And they brought him out a fur coat. And,
yeah.
I remember sitting there watching, going, what the fuck is going on right now?
Yeah, of course.
He is the visiting team. And
Why is it a fur coat?
I didn't get it. I didn't get the celebration. In theory, I do. He's an overall superstar.
Yeah.
But he's still going to have to get up and kick your team's ass. Why is everybody like,
yay? I know. You're right.
There's only so much respect that baseball or that sports fans have.
Yeah.
For the other team.
You're so right.
And celebrating the other team. Okay. Here's another thing. We have the movie on.
Let's just get to the end.
The movie wraps up. And
they
win the game, and everybody's doing their own version of celebrating. All the people who have been feuding the whole movie, Harris and Serrano hug.
Yeah.
Dorn punches out Sheen, legit punch, actually connected.
That's funny.
Picks him up and they hug because that's what you do in sports. And then Jake sees Rene Russo.
Yeah.
She runs onto the field. And he picks her up. And I got that part of it because that's the story they've told for the last 90 minutes.
Right.
What I didn't like is the final shot of the movie being the team raising Rene Russo up as if she did
anything. Well,
and here's the thing. It'd be one thing if it was just Jake holding her in a high hug.
Yeah.
But Serrano literally is holding her up as if he even knows her. He's never met this woman.
Right. Nobody knows who this woman is. And
Willie Mays Hayes, she's the guy that means your buddy can't come out drinking with you.
Yeah,
because
right.
he has to read Moby Dick.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what's happening.
Why is everybody happy that she's there?
Well, the biggest question is so did she leave her fiancé? Did they not? Okay. I don't, like.
And I do have the answer for that.
And it's stupid.
There is an answerable question. Yes. Because there was the original end. There's two alternate endings. One took place before the Yankees game.
Okay.
Which I'll get to in a minute. The other one was the actual end of the movie. And it was the wedding of Lynn and Jake Taylor.
Oh.
So she did leave and they filmed. They didn't,
yeah.
They didn't include it on a deleted scene, but it was filmed. The ending of Jake Taylor and Lynn getting married.
Right.
Their wedding was the original ending to the movie.
Okay.
And it was filmed. The whole team was there. It just never was included in any supplemental features or anything like that, but it was actually shot. The ending that took place, it wasn't so much an ending, but a twist.
Okay.
Before the Yankees game, Lou Brown goes in to Rachel Phelps' office.
Okay.
Before the Yankees game and hands in his resignation.
Okay.
And she's like, why? He goes, because it doesn't matter if we win this game or we lose this game, I'm quitting on my terms. I'm not letting you fucking fire me.
Okay.
She reveals to him that this was her motivational plan all along. She wasn't actually a bad person, and there never was a Miami deal. She was doing this to motivate the team
to
get better, to win, because she loves this team and she loves it. Was actually that scene is on the DVD, and it was actually a very well acted scene by the actress there, which I'll grab her name in a second.
Oh, and that also is a great twist.
Margaret Wheaton, who's also passed on. But it was a very well acted scene. It was emotional. She was tearing up and stuff, and she was professing her love for the city and all that sort of stuff. The problem was, and also, during the Yankees game, they actually filmed her, and there's some supplemental shots of that on the DVD, because she was cheering for the team along with Charlie in her box, because at that point it had been revealed that she actually did love the team, and they had to go back and reshoot all those and have her be pissed off the more the crowd was getting behind them.
Right.
The reason they cut it and changed the ending was they did test audiences, and at that point in the movie, audiences had fell in love with hating her.
Right, okay.
And the audience didn't like the fact that now it was all a rouge.
Yeah, right.
They were like, no, I'm good with not liking her. I'm good with her being the villain.
Right.
So.
Okay.
They took that out. And Major League?
Yeah, that was Major League.
So your first time watching it, what's your end result?
You know, this movie was fine. You know, I don't regret waiting 30 years to see it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like I missed out.
Okay.
It was fine. I thought the best part of the movie was the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought it was a little bit too disjointed at points to, like, really, like, give it, like, a wow. Like, mm-hmm. You got to go see this.
The Rene Russo stuff took away from it.
The Rene Russo stuff, the fact that
I looked at it very much.
It's basically the Rene Russo stuff.
Yeah, I looked at it kind of like the baseball version of Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, yes.
Where it was like, I loved every part of boot camp.
As soon as
they go to war, I'm just like, fuck, we got two more hours of this.
Yeah.
And it's like spring training was great.
Yep, the baseball stuff was great.
And the baseball stuff at the end was great, but it's like, really, do I need to see? No, I don't need that stuff. I don't need Rene Russo and Jake Taylor in a weird, not rapey, but kind of rapey, stalker-ish relationship.
Right, I also don't care about Jake Taylor enough in this. I care more about Wild Thing and Willie Mays Hayes than I do Jake Taylor. And this story is basically about Jake Taylor.
It is. To the point, even, I mean, Tom Berenger was a thing at the time.
Yeah.
Like, he was a major star. I mean, him and Sheen were actually both coming off Platoon at the time.
Yeah, right.
But he was the bigger star in Platoon. He had, God, what was the other movie? It was like a 30-somethings relationship. Was it Sandals? No, he wasn't Sandals Fire. That was a Rat Pack one.
Yeah.
But it was kind of, it was kind of like that. Let me grab his IMDb real quick.
Yeah, right.
But he was a big, him and Corbin Burnson were actually the big stars in this.
Right.
Charlie Sheen was still a young actor. Wesley Snipes was completely unknown.
Oh, yeah.
But he turned into, Wesley Snipes, before we wrap up, I just want to give you Wesley Snipes' run after this, because it was pretty goddamn impressive. Let me pull Tom Berenger up first here, just so what he was on, because it'll fucking torture me. Let me see, all the way down.
Oh, The Substitute. I love that movie.
Yeah, he did Sniper.
Yep.
Around this time,
Major League.
Where was it?
Last Rites. Born on the 4th of July.
Born on the 4th of July. Yeah. So where the hell's Platoon? There's Platoon. He did Eddie and the Cruisers. Big Chill. That was what I was thinking.
Oh, okay.
The Big Chill. Was kind of the 30-somethings relationship movie of the time. It was a big deal in the 80s. So Tom Berenger was a big deal. Corbin Burnson was on L.A. Law, which at the time was a major fucking show. But Wesley Snipes literally came out of nowhere, much like Willie Mays Hayes did.
Yeah.
And after Major League, went on to do King of New York, which underrated cult hit. Mo Better Blues with Spike Lee. New Jack City, which is a career-defining role.
It is.
Jungle Fever, again, working with Spike Lee. Water Dance, I don't really know too well. But then we got White Man Can't Jump, Passenger 57. Passenger 57 was like his I'm an action star movie.
Yes.
Which it amazes me that after Major League, it took 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 movies for Hollywood to be like, I want that guy to save the day.
Yeah, right.
Like, how do you not have Willie Mays Hayes saving the day after fucking Major League comes out in the theaters?
It's true.
It took
Because he's kind of goofy. He's kind of goofy in this.
But he has that charisma.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's an athletic actor, even not being an athlete.
Right.
Which we've proven. But, yeah, he had a hell of a fucking run. And even the ones after that weren't awesome, but weren't bad. I mean, Boiling Point, Rising Sun was great with
Demolition Man.
Demolition Man is in the archives, newageinsiders.com. Sugar Hill, okay, was all right. But yeah, it took him a while to get back with Money Train and all that stuff. But it was, the funny thing is, it was many, many years before he even did Blade.
Yeah,
Blade was 10 years later.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Which is hilarious because, when we're introduced to Serrano, he's dressed as Blade.
Yes. Yeah, I was like, is that Wesley Snipes? No, that's not Wesley Snipes.
That's not Blade.
That's not Blade. That's weird.
Blade's father.
Yes, Blade's dad.
Who else? Oh, let's do a minute on Uecker.
Okay.
Because Bob Uecker is probably what most people, with the exception of Charlie Sheen and Wild Thing, probably what most people remember.
Yeah.
And probably the most quotable as far as the sports world is that just a bit outside, tried the corner and missed.
Yeah.
And Uecker was Uecker.
Yeah.
You know, and he was coming up. He had actually done some acting. Not only was he a baseball player, obviously.
Yeah.
You know,
color commentator.
Yeah, and he became a commentator. He was a career 200 hitter.
Yeah.
He was not a great baseball player, but he also, why I believe Uecker became something was because he had enough sense of humor for himself.
Yep.
Where he's like, yeah, I was one of the worst players in baseball, but they kept signing me. He did Mr. Belvedere. He did, what was that other sitcom he had?
Who's the Boss?
No, he played himself. He played himself in Who's the Boss. It was just Belvedere.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so he just did Mr. Belvedere. But even that, he was like a major player on that. He did 118 episodes of Mr. Belvedere.
Okay.
And, you know, the Major League comes around and he's the Milwaukee Brewers play-by-play guy. He's done all these Miller Lite ads,
right,
which were very popular in the early 80s. And it becomes him.
Right.
I mean, he got 2 WrestleManias out of it.
Yeah, he did.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's Bob Uecker.
Right.
And he said there was a whole section on the DVD just on Bob Uecker. And he's like, yeah, it was not hard at all. He's like, I'm not a Jack Daniels guy, but I'm more of a VO guy. And I'm like, outside of that, it was like I slipped right into this character. It was basically me. He's like, a lot of the stuff I do in games all the time. And I like the fact that they made Harry Doyle the local radio guy.
Yeah, he wasn't the TV guy.
Because any of us sports fans will know that once the team gets to the playoffs, you lose your local TV team.
That's true.
I'm a hockey guy, so I always look back to the Bruins Stanley Cup, and the TV call was the national guys, and Doc Emmerich is a fantastic play-by-play guy, but his call was very national.
Yeah, right.
Whereas Dave Gosher, who was on the Sports Hub,
yep,
that's the call I go to.
Well, it's the call they play around here,
get
too.
Get the duck boats ready. Get the. Yeah. It was so, because it's the local guy that's been with this team for 90 games.
Right.
You know, in baseball, 472 games.
I don't know. 5,000.
Too many. But that's the guy who's been traveling with them for every game, and he's been at every game. And I love the fact that they made him the radio guy. Also because he didn't have to be on camera.
Right.
So he's sitting there just pouring his Jack and having fun with it. Post game brought to you by Christ, I can't find it. To hell with it.
Yeah, who cares?
Fucking fantastic. So huge, yeah. Huge for Bob Uecker. And yeah, for Bob Uecker alone, I suggest people watch the sequel once.
Okay.
Back to the Minors, you can skip with Scott Bakula. It's not worth even thinking about seeing.
But it's Scott Bakula.
But Major League 2 still has enough of the core guys, and Bob Uecker is fantastic in it.
Okay.
That's what I would suggest.
Maybe I'll check it out.
You know, it's kind of like... No, there's no redeeming qualities of Caddyshack 2. I was trying to make a reference, but it's just not. It's not a movie you should ever watch. So that is Major League.
That is Major League.
1989. Happy 30th anniversary to Major League.
Yeah.
Coming up next week on That Movie Show, I don't think it's any surprise to anybody.
It's the biggest movie that's ever going to movie.
The Avengers Endgame.
It's either going to be an hour of praising or an hour of not praising.
Either way, I think both of us will have seen it 3 times by the time you hear from us.
Yeah, probably.
Possibly in a marathon.
Possibly in a marathon.
Possibly parts of a marathon.
Yeah, right.
Possibly.
Go at 4. Go at 4 and then go again at 9 the same day.
Exactly. Possibly.
Like, that's one of the things about that marathon that I'm like very, like, they told us straight out. They're like, you can just come.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, do I want to go to Avengers Endgame at 4?
Well, my thing is...
Or what is it, 1 o'clock?
Well, Endgame starts at 5 on Thursday.
I thought it ended at 5.
No, it starts.
Oh, okay.
No, the Endgame... So, the Marvel Movie Marathon, 22 movies at Showcase Cinemas in Revere, starts Tuesday at 11:30 a.m.
Yes.
And it ends with the 5 p.m. showing of Endgame.
Okay.
We're just allowed to go?
Yeah.
Like, we've been kind of teasing on the radio show, which you can find Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., on North Shore 104.9 and on their app at NorthShore104.9.com, that we're going to go and we're going to do something, but we
haven't heard.
We've had a conversation, to be honest, and we've been trying to figure out what we're going to do and work our schedules out. So they got us tickets. I know that much.
Yeah, they got us tickets.
So it's like Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. If I got nothing to do in the afternoon, I just might go sit in for a couple hours and watch a couple Avengers movies. You know,
right.
I mean, watch a couple of MCU movies and then fuck off and go, you know, go home for dinner or something like that. That just might be my 3 days. Like, I get out of work, I'm like, I don't really want to go home. I'm going to go to the movie theater because I have that ticket.
Right.
Type of thing.
Right.
But yeah, so next week when you hear this show, it will be Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
I'm anticipating it being a kind of a positive show.
I think it's going to be a positive show, too. It has no...
3 hours and 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I am going to have to really manage my liquid intake.
My body is ready.
My body is ready.
My body is ready.
I am in peak condition for Avengers.
I am.
All right. We'll see you next week. Mike Wendt, Liam Stryker. You can follow us on social media. Don't stop waving just yet.
Okay, fine.
You can follow us on social media at Mike Wendt, at Liam NAI, hashtag That Movie Show. You can find our audio and video archives at newageinsiders.com. And please subscribe to New Age Insiders Pop on any podcasting app. If you're listening to this, you already are, so tell your friends to subscribe to New Age Insiders Pop on any podcasting app so you can find That Movie Show. Endgame's next week. I guess that'll be it.
That'll be it.
All right. We'll see you next week with Endgame.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.